Do you ever struggle with the question, if God is good, why is there suffering? We unpack this timeless question in a free chapter download from Why You Can Believe. It's called Why Does God Allow Suffering? And it's honest, hopeful, and deeply personal. From free will to a broken world, to the way suffering can lead us to God, this chapter will equip you with real biblical insight. Get your free download today at premierinsight.org/resources. Again, that's premierinsight.org/resources.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Thank you for listening to the show that brings you the thought and theology of C.S. Lewis with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources, and podcasts. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. But now for today's show.
It is my great pleasure to be joined today by Dr. Nathan Fayard, an assistant professor of English at Indiana Wesleyan University. He specialises in Old English literature, medievalism and the Inklings, and he's recently authored a new book called The Recovered Images. We're going to be talking about Nathan's work, as well as sharing a paper that he presented at the 2024 Undiscovered C.S. Lewis Conference, which was held at George Fox University in Oregon. And the title of Nathan's paper there was Prometheus on Perelandra, the Inversion of the Satanic Hero. Nathan, thank you so much for joining me today. I feel quite proud of myself for getting all those words out in the right order.
And I didn't make it easy on you with the alliteration of the titles and my strange name. So thank you for the great
I'm excited about delving into all those strange names. But before we do that and sort of delve into some romantic literature, which obviously Lewis was a huge fan of, and I feel
absolutely.
Like there's quite a lot of parallels with the work that you're doing and the work that he did. It'd be great if we could just sort of go back to the beginning. How did you first come across C.S. Lewis?
So my encounter with Lewis is, I think, how a lot of his fans these days tend to encounter him. My parents read me The Chronicles of Narnia when I was a boy. And when I was a kid, growing up in the 80s, in America, the fantastic was sort of in short supply. The marvelous, the fantastic stories that told tales of a world that was richer with meaning and significance and of wonder. And I had a Like Lewis, when he was a boy, I had a really just powerful desire for those kinds of tales. And I just devoured them in Narnia and everywhere else I could get them. But Narnia, of course, is special. It's magic. And it captures exactly what the fantastic is for. It captures the blending of wonder and meaning. And I was embarrassingly far along the path when I made the connection. Oh, this is about Christianity. Aslan is Jesus. Or he would say, not exactly the same thing, but so that was my origin with Lewis, and I always remembered him as a children's author. And then, like a lot of folks growing up in the Protestant tradition, you hear about him a little bit, but you don't get a ton of background. And it wasn't until college when I was delving into all the stuff that he loved, I was like, oh, he's actually also this amazing scholar, and he wrote all these other stories and all these other books. And so I rediscovered him there. And that's where my sort of professional interest, my scholarly interest, and my love of him and his stories began to unite.
Nathan, would you say that there are any ways that Lewis has impacted either your life or your faith journey? I mean, it sounds like you've been reading him since you were little in different iterations. But yeah, is there a particular area where you feel like he has really impacted your life or your faith journey?
Absolutely, and tremendously so. So he's enriched my life in a thousand ways. Lewis described the stories of George MacDonald as having baptized his imagination. Mm. Before he was ready to believe in God, MacDonald opened doors to the idea that the world could mean more than it appeared to mean on the surface, that there could be more than the physical material reality that we see and touch and taste. And Lewis played very much the same role for me. I didn't lose my faith in college way he did in his school years, but I came close. And I had a lot of the questioning that a lot of us have. If you are a thinking person, you go and you begin to learn the world is not as simple as you want it to be, or not as simple as you were imagining or were taught it was, that the simple answers don't satisfy. And it was through Lewis that I began to encounter the Christian tradition and Christian thought and discover, oh, all of these questions that seem so insurmountable, we actually have been answering these questions for thousands of years. And people like Lewis, these towering figures of intellect and wisdom, have found, if not perfect answers, because there are no perfect answers, good answers, useful answers. And so he was my path back to faith and back to orthodoxy. And then in terms of sort of how he impacted my life going forward, he has provided oftentimes for me the lenses through which I understand my experiences. And so his discussions of his own life and his own struggles and his own questions of faith and surprised by joy, his insights into morality and into living a virtuous life in Skriptic Letters, his insights into the nature of sin and the Great Divorce, these have been tremendously impactful on how I see the world.
And this might be really hard for you to pick, but do you have, if you had to pick a favorite book or quotation or work of Lewis, or is it perhaps that different parts of him speak to you at different times?
It's definitely the latter, but I always tell, because I always ask my students when I'm in my C.S. Lewis class, what's your favorite? And they always inevitably ask me, and I say, well, you know, it depends. If you ask me this time next week, it'll be different. But generally speaking, Pyrrhlander is my favorite. And it's because it's just such a beautiful book, and both in terms of its aesthetics and in terms of its messages and its themes. But I actually listened to your coverage with Alistair McGrath of That He Do Strength a while back, and y'all were talking about how that's really a favorite for both of you, which is such a beautiful rarity, because everybody tends to avoid That He Do Strength. But it's one that has grown on me, and I always say, like, it's nipping at the heels of Pyrrhlander.
Okay. Yeah, I did actually interview someone else who was at the Undiscovered Lewis conference, Joseph Weigel, who for him, That Hideous Strength is his absolute favourite Lewis book. So we're not alone. You mentioned there that you run a C.S. Lewis class. You do use Lewis quite a lot in your work, don't you? And obviously there are parallels with the fact that you're an English professor, you're teaching various aspects of romantic literature, some of the things that Lewis would have been teaching. How does it feel to be sort of standing, I guess, in his footsteps in some in some capacity? I mean, do you draw on him quite heavily in your work?
I absolutely do. How it feels is tremendously humbling. Whenever I compare myself to any of the Inklings, I think, oh my goodness, they accomplished more before they were half my age than I will my entire life. I know I'm in good company. I think that is actually something that's really helpful. And I often teach, when I teach, you know, the medieval literature that is one of my foci or romantic literature, it's often through that lens of the Inklings. And so, you know, this is sort of this concept that C.S. Lewis brought to it that enriched it, this concept that Tolkien brought to it that enriched it. And it often helps make it accessible to students of the modern day and connect it to things, because that's precisely what the Inklings did. They connected these classic works and these classic ideas and these enduring insights and stories to higher truths in ways that were very accessible. And so I think that's definitely something that I try to bring into it.
And obviously it's been 60 odd years since C.S. Lewis died, but you see on a day-to-day basis, I'm assuming, with your students that he is still relevant today.
Absolutely. We're accompanying... So we're reading Pyrrhlander in my C.S. Lewis class right now, but along with it, they're reading Surprised by Joy. And the lists of, you know, classical and medieval literature that he talks about, they don't understand half the references or two-thirds of the references or any of the references. But they understand his description of joy. They understand his talking about, you know, God pursuing him when he doesn't want to believe. They understand his struggles with faith and with belief and with pain. We were talking today about that horrible, beautiful passage in Pyrrhlander where the young man tortures the frogs. And my wife will never forgive C.S. Lewis for writing that. but and that speaks to the Ransom experiences this, and he says, it's better the universe would not have been made than this one experience of suffering would have happened. Mm-hmm. For a moment, he believes that. And we've all felt that to some degree. I mean, we've all seen something so terrible, thinking, how could a good God allow this? And how we answer that question is, you know, the future of our faith eventually resides on it. And so Lewis shows us that struggle and a path through that struggle. And I think that is something that never will not be accessible and connecting.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
Before we get back to the show, I want to tell you about a brand new resource that we're offering this month from NT Wright. Ask NT Wright Anything, the Essential Collection. It's a compilation of Tom's most asked questions, like, should we pray to God the Father or Jesus? Should Christians improve the world if it's all being renewed anyway? Or how can I be a Christian and make sense of modern questions that defy God's existence? This resource is our thank you gift when you support Premier Insight this month. Your generosity equips believers across the country with biblical wisdom in a confused world. Go now to premierinsight.org/donate to request your copy. That's premierinsight.org/donate. Now, let's get back to today's show.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation. I mean, you've definitely already touched on this, but do you think there's any specific area of Lewis or aspect of his work where he has really changed your perspective on a particular issue?
So many. I think the thing that has been most useful to me and most rewarding is that concept of joy, what the Inklings called Sehnsucht, and I'm sure I'm mispronouncing it. But this idea of you experience something of transcendent beauty or that just sort of touches you through the world, but it's not the thing itself. It's not that piece of music or that painting or that sunset or that landscape. It just comes through it for a moment. As we get a glimpse of the divine, and then we are hungering for that which transcends our world, which reminds us that there's more to our world than we see. And I think that perspective, looking for those moments and recognizing them and seeing what they are, has been, because I already knew that, but he puts a voice to it, a name to it. And that then grants greater understanding, and you can go further with it because of it. Mm-hmm.
That's really helpful. Nathan, before we dive specifically into Romantic literature and some of the poets and writers that influenced Lewis, would you give us a brief summary of Perelandra without any spoilers, if you can? Just enough that we can understand what you're saying in this and then in your paper later. I'm aware that it is really tricky to do that without spoilers. But if you can, just in case someone hasn't read the book.
Gotcha. So I think there's one piece that I have to spoil because I talk about it in the paper.
Fine.
But
that's fine.
so essentially, the story is the sequel to Out of the Silent Planet, and Ransom is a philologist who was kidnapped, taken to Mars in the first book, and they're discovered unfallen alien life and discovered that the universe was actually this beautiful, harmonious place with only Earth out of sequence, out of step. And in Perelandra, he is taken to Venus by the guardian angel, the spirit of that world, and the spirit of Malachandra of Mars, to help prevent a second fall in a sort of extraterrestrial Garden of Eden. And there he meets a green extraterrestrial Eve of sorts, and encounters a man who becomes possessed of a essentially a demon, a dark Eldil, a dark angel, and has an intense debate with him about whether about the nature of life, the nature of the universe, and whether our Eve character should transgress just like our Eve transgressed. And Ransom is standing there to help prevent this fall. And it's this really beautiful exploration of all of these questions that we've just been talking about.
And before we chat about Milton and Shelley, why don't you tell us a little bit about your upcoming book, The Recovered Images?
Ah, absolutely. So I have got finished. I'm still editing, but the writing is finished. And it's essentially an exploration of the medieval elements in the Ransom trilogy. And if any of you have read these books, they're tremendously medieval in character, even down to the nature of the cosmos. We were just talking about the guardian angels of different worlds, and Lewis is adapting these medieval ideas of a universe that's this tremendously graceful dance with all the pieces moving in harmony. And that medieval coloring, the medieval ideas, the medieval stories that Lewis is adapting for these books, they're manifold and understanding their influence in these tales is really enriches our understanding of the tales themselves. And I'm exploring some of the areas that haven't been touched on by their scholars. So one of the sort of key, so the three key ideas are first and foremost that Lewis is specifically responding to the science fiction of the era that he's writing in. So it's a science fiction that's tremendously imperialistic and chauvinistic in terms of Western culture. The good humans go out into space and defeat the savage monstrous aliens, and they are spreading civilization, and or the savage aliens are coming to Earth, and the heroic humans are having to defend them. As Lewis himself put it, humanity are the good guys and everything else is ogres. Mm. But it's these stories of conquest and control and of colonization. And Lewis instead looks back to medieval stories of travel and especially of pilgrimage, stories that take their characters into other worlds, into other realms to learn from, but not to control or to dominate. So that's the first piece, is his stories are these stories of wonder and appreciation and spiritual growth rather than stories of conquest and domination and possession. The second piece is his aliens are, they're, instead of the bug-eyed monsters of the contemporary science fiction, you know, everything's, the things that Ransom's expecting in the beginning of Alice on the Planet, these horrible monstrosities that are matching unparalleled intellect to unparalleled cruelty, inhuman in both aspects, he finds something very different. And essentially what he's doing, Lewis is taking the medieval idea of the monster, not as something dangerous and threatening, although they can be that, but as something to be marveled at. The word de monster is to observe, or to be a wonder, to be observed. And that's what he creates, is these creatures who are, just as oftentimes the medieval monsters were viewed, connected to us by our shared connection to God and are serving a spiritual purpose rather than a threat to us. And finally, sort of viewing the entire thing, the entire story, the entire trilogy, as this combination of pilgrimage and quest. It's a journey seeking a spiritual end, but it also has the sort of wandering aspect of the quest. And this is a medieval Irish genre called the Imrav captures this. It was stories of people going out into the seas west of Ireland, and literally the name means rowing about. They would just sort of head out and take the adventure that God gave them, and not knowing where they were going, but the purpose of the journey, even though it wasn't a physical location like Jerusalem or Canterbury, was pilgrimage-like because it had a spiritual purpose.
That sounds amazing. Do you have any idea when it's going to be out or any of those details?
So I have a publisher who's interested, and I need to have time to actually finish the editing.
Sure.
This semester, I'm hoping to wrap that up, but it may be the summer, and then probably a year or two after that.
Great. So, well, keep us posted because it sounds fascinating.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast with me, Ruth Jackson. Many of the topics that we've touched on today are discussed in greater detail on earlier episodes of the programme. Check out our archive of past shows at premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, videos and podcasts. Plus, if you register on our website or sign up for our newsletter there, then you will get exclusive access to new content, free resources and more. That's premierunbelievable.com. What did you think of today's show? Are there any topics or works of C.S. Lewis that you would like us to explore next? We would love to hear from you. Send us an email, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Connect with us on X, formerly known as Twitter, @premierunbelievablefe, or drop us a direct message on Instagram or Facebook @premierunbelievable. We have also recently launched on TikTok, so if that's your thing, or you know anyone else who might be interested, then you can find us there @premier.unbelievable. Your feedback and thoughts are so important to us, so please get in touch. If you're enjoying the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it on whatever platform you're listening on, as it helps more people to discover the show. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively to Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.